Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
I'm Chase Rolson with Rubline Marketing.
This is Jeff Lindsay.
This is Michael Pitt.
Hey, everybody, it's John Dudley from Knock On TV.
Hey, guys, this is Jared Scheffler from Whitetail Adrenaline.
Hi, I'm Taylor Drury from Drury Outdoors.
Hey, this is Nick Munt from Bone Collector.
Hey, this is Melissa Bachman.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
Working Class Bow Hunter Podcast.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
Working Class Bow Hunter.
You're listening to the Working Class Bow Hunter. That's right. This is a podcast for Billy Joe Lunchbucket, the working man, just like me and you. My name's Travis T. Bone Turner from The Bone Collector. Thank you for tuning in.
Nobody pushes the envelope like Working Class Bow Hunter.
It's really, really not that good.
It is episode number 228 of the Working Class Bowhunter Podcast. We are right here at 1600 Buckslayer Place, the beautiful Buckatorium, lovely Sherrard, Illinois. Mm-hmm. For everybody who doesn't live in Illinois, Sherrard, Illinois. My name is Steve. Steve's. In the studio today is Kurtz.
Hi, guys.
And Tank Intern Tanks.
Yep.
Oh, that one actually fits.
I know.
Do you like that?
Mm-hmm.
Des Moines. Des Moines, Iowa, and Springfield, Illinois.
Thank you for
being
here.
Some capitals for some Midwest.
Do you have veteran shout-outs?
I do. Do you want to hop right into it like that, bro?
Yeah, right out the gate. I don't feel so hot, man.
Bro, you all right? You can be all right.
I've
over
been
there.
Sick all day, everyone listening. So if I don't seem to be as chipper as I usually am, that is why. Continue on with the veteran shout out, please. I don't know if I should drink beer or not.
I don't think you should. Not in
just
the state
it.
You are.
I'm on that Imodium, if you know what I'm saying. That's all the details we need to get into. Working all you people who drank that
for
before.
Your ass.
Working class for your ass.
For your butt odor.
That Imodium.
Dude, the vet shout out. And if you ever want a vet shout out, go to workingclassbowhunter.com. We have a vet shout out tab. We'll shout out any vet, doesn't matter if they hunt or not. This one is for Corporal Cliff the Mick Smith. It's from your old buddy D-Rock. He said, "This badass son of a wanker could battle with the best of them. Fearless Irish." And then there's a three-leaf clover. Mick, he would have had your bloody back if his life depended on it. So look, he's a Marine out of Connecticut. Cliff, thank you for your service to this country. We appreciate everything you do. Keep on fighting that good fight. And thank you, D-Rock, for sending that in.
Awesome. Submit a veteran shout-out. It doesn't really require much of us, but we can do our part to just kind of shed some light on good people. So go over to workingclassbowhunter.com right now and submit a veteran shout out while you listen. You won't regret it. It ain't hurting nobody. This episode is brought to you by, every episode is brought to you by Elite Archery. And there's a few things of why we need to talk about Elite Archery right now that it's not hunting season. And Steve, I'm going to let you talk because my stomach hurts.
Tum tum hurts. This is the time of year where I've maybe talked about a couple weeks ago. You know, you're getting ready to order your ritual, but you should have already ordered your Echelon or your Victory X. It's 3D season.
Or your ritual.
Tis the season, huh?
Or your ritual.
Or you can use your ritual. But, I mean,
you can really do anything you want.
But you really should own two bows, or maybe three, four. You know, whatever the situation calls for, Elite's got you covered. Then you want to get, someone else who's younger, smaller framed into archery. You know, they've got a bow for that, too. So why don't you go to elitearchery.com? It's that time of year. Mm. You need to get yourself a brand new bow and then get ready for hunting season because it's only a few months away, so.
Yeah, that's scary. I feel unprepared, which I feel unprepared every year. Also, Scent Crusher, and I think we should add a note that Scent Crusher teased a new item today that looks pretty exciting, and we'll leave it at that. But Scent Crusher's got some awesome stuff. I was rocking the Ozone Go today in the truck for good reasons. What up, Imodium? And the stuff is actually, it's really awesome. It's going to help, especially on my Colorado trip, the gear bag. I can run cycles in the truck and keep that mountain clothes scent free when I'm sweating my ass off in it, when I can't come back and just take a shower at my leisure.
Well, you didn't need to plug it into your truck now, did you?
No, but way to make it awkward. But check out scentcrusher.com.
Bro.
Episode's also brought to you by HHA. That goes right in with the old 3D topic or shooting archery topic. HHA, single pin sights, lifetime warranty, veteran supported. They support our veterans. That sounded like the veterans support them.
Yeah, I'm sure veterans support them, too.
American-made. Yeah. Can't go wrong with HHA. Sniper hunting products. We're using the Sniper Trail Cams. I'm using the Cell Cam. Badass right now, especially. I'm going to go check all my other sniper cams this weekend in the heat. I'm planning on doing that Sunday after Eric ties the freaking knot.
Yes. I've got a feeling that I'm going to find a brand new river where I set my camera up.
Is it underwater, you think?
Dude, I don't think that's underwater, but I think where water would have ran through, there's a nice little creek running through there now that was not there before.
We're supposed to get rain Saturday, too. So.
Ooh, we are.
Yeah, but Sunday's supposed to be nice.
That's why I might hang a stand and then check all my cameras on Sunday morning.
There you go.
Would you see my Ropeman 1 out there? I'm actually making my own lineman's rope, man.
I did see that.
I'm being safe. So me and my dad got Ropeman 1s to act as the whatever knot it's supposed to be. What tank?
I don't remember what the knot is called.
But basically, with pressure on it, it doesn't slip, and you can let off and slide it out. But it's basically a mechanical knot.
I saw that thing, and I thought it was like a real fancy cigar cutter. I go, is Kurt getting into cigars now? Cigar aficionado?
Yeah.
Something like that?
That's me. Guilty. No. We have killer food plots on this episode.
We do.
We plan on talking what they offer, food plots in general. And this, we're kind of talking to a lot of people that are dealing with food plots, and we got big time in the future coming up here, talk about some mineral and maybe some mineral debate, too. So look forward to that. We'll get these boys on here, talk about killer food plots, see what they're all about, and we hope you guys enjoy.
All right, on the phone with us from Killer Food Plots, we're going to show a little mercy for Mr. Nick Percy. Nick, what's going on?
Hey, guys. Glad to be on. Appreciate you having me.
Thank you for coming on the show, man. We always feel grateful when somebody is willing to take their time out of their day to talk to a bunch of idiots from Working Class Bow Hunters, so we're thankful for you.
Well, you know, as it would be, right? You guys were trying to call me and leave it to plotting with the Percy's. There's always some kind of twist and turn and curve, and my phone died just to recall me. So, you know, we go with the slope. It's all good.
That's the best way to do it. Well, I guess how we got hooked up with you was, you know, the boys from Rubline Marketing, great
Absolutely.
Group of cats, depends on who you talk to. We love them.
Yeah. Dude, I'm still undefeated against Big Mike.
Yeah, Steve and Big Mike got in a fight, so that was cool.
Still undefeated, bro.
That's good. He's a big guy.
Yeah, I ain't scared.
Well, tell us about who you are and how you got involved with Killer Food Plots and kind of how you got to where you are today.
Well, I started doing food plotting shortly after I got out of high school. I have a green thumb, and my buddies knew that. I'll leave it at that. And they wanted me to plant food plots for them. I wasn't a hunter. I was a fisherman. Literally, when I wasn't in school or working, I was in a river, and every hour, morning, noon, or night, it didn't matter that I could be in a river fishing. So they asked me to try and do some food plotting for them. They were big bow hunters, and so I said, well, you know, I'm up for any challenge. So I started kind of playing around with it, messing around, trying to plant food plots, failing miserably, and really had no clue what I was doing in that area of growing things. And so second year, I'd done some research, not to be whooped by anything. I'm a pretty driven individual. I ended up doing some different research, having minimal success. And later in that summer, after having some marginal success in the spring planting, I actually got involved with one of the biggest bigger seed companies in the industry, and the only one at that time. And I started working with them and getting some education. And one of the guys that runs the research facility kind of took me under his wing. And I made myself an excellent student and spent about 10 years or so using their products, learning, spending time at the research center, learning how to do certain things soil-wise and the different species of seed and how they're different and working with the growers and all that kind of stuff. And then became fairly successful about 4 years into it, 3 to 4 years into it, growing really good food plots, became an educator, installer, started a side business. And then I took that from just a cash helping buddies and friends and family and, you know, friends of family, to legitimate, got a tax ID number, and, you know, and I've been trying to get out of that hole ever since.
Well, very cool. Yeah, I guess there is a build there. You don't just, like, get into food plots and have a food plot company just in, like, a year. It seems like something very difficult. Because as a hunting community, as bow hunters especially, who are taking food plots seriously or trying to learn, it feels like there's so much information out there that it's impossible to learn it all unless you're, like, completely engulf yourself in it.
Yeah, well, it does seem overwhelming, especially, you know, if it's not something you work in every day or you have some kind of, schooling or education or a farming background to understand the soil and sunlight and the combination of all those things. So, but it's really, I think it's more people tend to be a little afraid of it because it is the unknown, right? So the one thing that has really I learned early on is that I'm really passionate about what I do in developing the food plots, and I'm always trying to learn something new. And when I look at things, I'm an engineer by trade, so I'm actually an engineering manager. That's my day job. And I run my business about 90 hours a week. I figured I don't sleep much. I love McDonald's iced tea, and I drink it by the gallons. My kids tell me I need to stop drinking so much of it, but that's my poison. But I really, I'm just passionate about learning and growing and developing solutions. So, you know, we've developed some cool products for soil to grab and hold moisture, to build the soil back up, and that's a problem. It doesn't matter if it's Michigan or the 25 other states we manage in the U.S., or Canada for that matter. The soil has always had some part in the success or failure of a food plot.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where I've really dug in and started to learn and understand. And there just really wasn't any product, any one specific product or combination of products out there that could help me have success as an installer. And, you know, we manage for Scentlock and several other 25 major companies in the industry. And with that, in 26 different states, you deal with clay. You deal with red clay, blue clay. You deal with rock. You deal with the combination of Michigan. There's no bottom. It's the bottomless sand pit. There's or some combination of rocks or down in Ohio, you're dealing with very shallow soil on top of straight, you know, bedrock.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of different challenges to actually grow food plots. But when you have some very key pieces of information anybody can be successful doing it, and the right seed species to plant in the soil you have. That's the thing, right? Everybody wants clover, or they want to go right to this product that, in clover, for instance, which is not always user friendly. The soils can't support it. They don't have enough moisture. They're not high enough quality. The pH is low. Any number of reasons, right? So what I decided early on is that if I was going to be able to be successful in the business that I had, and I wanted to grow it and to bring more people in, that the first focal point I needed is to be an educator. Mm-hmm. And all the information that I had learned and that I had gathered over the years, I needed to start sharing that with people. And that's really how Killer Food Plots came about. We are an eight-year, I've been doing this 28 years, but we are an eight-year new company, right? So I rebranded. I was I had some partners from Wisconsin in a different seed business in between working for that large seed company where I was using their products, installing, et cetera. Mm-hmm. I did about just over a three-year partnership, which didn't go very well, and I decided that I needed to pull the plug and walk away. Actually, my accountant and my lawyer said that, took me to lunch and said, you need to walk away. before you drive 9 hours and act 16 for 15 minutes.
Yeah, did they pay for your meal? Because if they pay for your meal, it's like, yeah, I see the writing on the wall. I got to get the hell out.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, they paid for it, all right. Yeah, I think they handcuffed me to the chair because they were going to make their point that I wasn't driving to Wisconsin 9 hours. So. there's those things in life that get you stirred up, and that was one of them. But they had a vision and said, look, you know, you have put your heart and soul into this. It's not about the things that happened to you, and it's not about the things that are going on at the moment, right? And it was really good advice, and I got refocused on the goal. There's no other way you could work 130 hours a week like I do if you're not focused on the goal, right?
Yeah, you got to be passionate about what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So, and the thing that's cool is that, you know, everybody wants to kill the big buck, and that's your focus, and that's what you're, you know, a lot of times you're spending your hours prepping and preparing and putting food plots in and getting your blind right and buying camouflage and all the gizmos and gadgetries for your bow or your gun or whatever. Mm-hmm. And for me, I love to help other people have success because, to me, I get to share in all of that cool stuff going on with lots of different people, and it's very rewarding for me. And it's a good thing because I only hunted once in the last 4 years. So.
Oh, really?
yeah, I actually hunted in Iowa for the first time last year, and I killed a 9.5-year-old buck. That was pretty cool.
Oh, that is
14
awesome.
Bucks around, four, or 14 other bucks around the tree when I killed this deer within 20 yards, so that was a cool experience.
Did you kill him off a food plot? Or?
No, I actually, we have food plots, but I was hunting I don't often hunt over a food plot, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I was hunting the transition between the bedding and our food plots.
Right.
And there's just the sneak tunnels that I built through the woods for the deer to cruise and then bring them right down in front of the tree stand. So, yeah, it was pretty neat. They were migrating through and just kind of nibbling along the way and walking right down through the corridor and was able to get it done. So,
well, it probably feels like success when you have customers that have planted your seed and killed big bucks over that. That's kind of like probably where you get a little bit of satisfaction of hunting, to seeing other people, you know, be successful over your product.
Oh, a ton. And that just fuels me, right? And, you know, it fuels me to find new products and new opportunities and to try to reach out to more people. So, I mean, I really appreciate you guys having me on the show because this is the best way to, you know, be able to share that knowledge, to be able to help people to realize that food plotting, although it may be mysterious to you because you haven't done it before, it's not difficult. It's just having some very basic understanding, having some good direction, and to your point, you have to kind of work through all the minutiae that's out there on the internet and everywhere else about what should I do or how should I do it. It's pretty basic when
right.
it comes to food plotting. Soil test is the first thing you should spend $20 on and get done because it establishes the blueprint of what's going on in your soil,
mm-hmm.
right? Otherwise, you're going to spend how many, you know, say $130 on fertilizer, you're going to spend X amount of money on seed, And, you know, if you're just going to kind of wing it and buy some pellet line and not throw it up in the air and go, well, I hope it works, and go back to watching the football game, you know, waiting for season, it's probably going to give you marginal success.
Yeah, Cameron was just giving me the eye when you were saying that, because I just, before we had, we've done some podcasts with like other people with food plots, but I didn't know all the information until like talking to guys like you that know food plots. I just, we planted. I didn't do a soil test. I mean, thankfully it's growing. It looks like it's growing well, but like you said, I'm not going to get what I could have got out of it.
Yeah. Well, it helps when you're in the Midwest.
Yeah, that does help, but we'll see. So it's when you say that, I'm like, fuck.
It's a no-brainer, but, you know, most people, it doesn't pass through their brain. They don't even think about it because they don't know.
Yeah.
Right? They don't know that that's what they should do, you know, and that's kind of the point. You know, there's a lot of information out there, but it's confusing and it's conflicting, or it's geared towards promoting only their product and not really giving education. And, you know, my attitude is I don't want to be number 25 in the list of seed that suck because somebody failed again, right?
Right.
That honestly was, you know, kind of for like 2 years, I talked to people and they're like, I don't want to spend $20 on a soil test. I'm like, dude, give up 118 pack. That's it. $20.
Yeah. And don't drink beer for one Saturday. You're fine.
Well, guess what? Because then on the second day, you already killed your deer on opening day. You're sleeping in and everybody else freezing their ass off in their stand and you killed your deer. And you're already drinking all the beer before they get there. So, right. I mean, it's a winner, right? So, really, it's a crazy, crazy thing to think of, but $20. And as we kind of talk through this, you know, we're talking soil and soil health. pH is a huge thing that people, they focus so much on pH, and it's very, very important because the pH content of the soil establishes the availability of the nutrients that are in the soil to support the development of roots and to support the short-term and long-term growth of the food plot that you're trying to plant.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because, you know, the pH, when it's low, it's binding nutrients up in the soil. So it means it's not, the plant can't access it. It's like knocking on the bulletproof glass, but it can't get through it, right? It can't get to what it needs.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is if, say, you spend $100 on fertilizer and you stick $100 of fertilizer into that half acre food plot, well, at 7.0 or perfectly neutral soil, $100 of your $100 investment is available to the plant.
That makes sense.
But as soon as you start to drop and you get to 6.5, you start to lose automatically at that point. You've lost 20%. So that's there's your $20 that you didn't spend on the soil test right away by dropping to 6. When you drop to 6.0, you lose 20% availability. And that 20% availability is the difference between marginal success, 4 to 6 inches of growth, and 18 to 22 inches of growth potential out of your food plot, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a lot of food and a lot of available food and a lot of trips by your deer back to your food plot because there's actually something there to eat. And it's return on your investment of your time and your money, right? So that soil test is super, super crucial.
Yeah, I won't go another year without doing a soil test, I'll tell you that. Yeah. Because now I'm like, damn it.
Now you got to spend all that money on that Trader Joe's alkalized water so you can spray your food plants and get the pH level up.
Right.
Yeah, right. Right.
Pallet of that costs, you know, $5,000.
yeah, right. Well, and, you know, pellet lime is so cheap. I tell people, like, you know, it doesn't cost very much to fix soil usually. You know, whether you're using ag lime, or which is the big, heavy, dense, you know, that's a little more challenging, a little harder because you have to be able to have a tractor or equipment or hire someone to come put the ag lime out. It's so heavy and dense. My dumb ass put it in my funnel spreader thinking, oh, I'll just put Pathway full, and I hit a bump and folded the thing in, and here I am beating it off my tractor with a sledgehammer to get it off. It might have 3-inch diameter tubes that make it look big and robust, but, you know, TSC, it's made pretty chintzy, so don't try this at home. It's pretty crazy, but
Well, you guys offer a ton of stuff, like just a bunch of different seed blends and some stuff in here that is really interesting to me, which I guess is still like the smoke screen and the border patrol, I think is a really great idea. Maybe you can explain some of those first, and then I'd like to like hear what your favorite blend is for just kind of if anyone's listening in any state, what would be like your go-to blend? But yeah, I want to hear about Border Patrol and Smokescreen.
All right. Well, Border Patrol is one of our staple products. We developed that 18 years ago, and it's been continuing to be evolved. Border Patrol produces an 8 to 14 foot tall wall of screen, which we utilize in many, many different ways. So I will say 95% of the customers that I have or that contact me have an issue with trespassers or poaching or a neighbor sitting on their fence line shooting into their field at their deer. And so I'm not necessarily a huge hinge cutting guy. I'm going in and trying to hinge trees. Most of the time they die, and there's a lot of other things. Maybe we can get into that later in the discussion, but timber management is more my theme of what I do. Mm-hmm. But on the Border Patrol, we create this screening. We create these buffer and these safety zones between neighbors, and we block the deer movement and encourage them. It pinches them, and you can create pinch points and open areas. And when you look at a food plot, and you're walking out to your food plot, say, in an afternoon, and you can see it from a long ways away, and as soon as you do see it, it's a bright green, right? Well, you have to realize you're entering in the backyard, front yard, side yard, or bedroom of your deer. Mm-hmm. And they're sitting in there just like you sit in your house and look out your back window and the deer in the backyard, right? Mm-hmm. And that is one of the greatest mistakes that we make as hunters, is our entry-exit strategy in and out of our properties to hunt. We're blowing the deer out to the neighbors. We're frustrated because we've been watching this buck for 2 years and the neighbor shoots it. There's a lot of different things that are going on. And the Border Patrol, for me, creates security. But it also forces buck movement into the food plot to check for does. So when you have a wide open food plot, a buck can skirt all the way around that food plot. He can just stand off in the woods and he can scan the open food plot. He doesn't have a reason to commit. He won't. Mm-hmm. He's not going to go put himself out there in the middle of the daytime in the middle of that food plot. But as soon as I create these soft edge walls, and as soon as I create this kind of maze effect on the inside and create the openings, I give him a sense of security. Deer are edge creatures by nature, right? They browse the edge of the field. It looks like somebody bowl cut it, you know, took a haircut, 7 foot on down. There's nothing left on the edge of the field. Well, deer prefer soft type edge, grasses, crop, like cornfields, brushy type cover, that stuff that breaks them up or makes them feel like they're
not
hidden,
exposed.
And not exposed. But the softer with grasses and different things, they feel even safer because predators will not run where things like grasses and such are hitting them in the face. They will run a trail. They will cruise through rows of standing corn. They will do that. But unless there's a beat down trail, they will not be able to pursue the deer. And so it's very interesting. It's a very interesting thing that we found with Border Patrol as one of the advantages. As we create this perimeter, this outside perimeter around the food plot, we leave a buffer between the trunk of the trees and some of the low-hanging branches, which eventually will become licking branches, or what I call fire hydrants for deer. And we leave that hallway, right? We leave that hallway. And what's cool is that that hallway is multi-purpose. So when I'm coming in the morning and I walking towards my food plot, I'm blind to what's going on out there. It's dark. And maybe I have my flashlight and I'm bobbing around or my headlamp, right? And the deer are like, look, here comes Elmer Fudd out to the stand. We got to go, right? Well, what ends up happening is that by creating this wall around the food plot, they don't see you coming or approaching. And you can walk between the timber edge and the edge of your Border Patrol or the edge of your food plot in that hallway, essentially a communication and travel corridor. What's cool about that is that you're able to skate by the deer. Let's say you step on a branch or leaves. They hear you, but they do not see you. They may not smell you, and they may not put all of their senses into motion. As soon as all their senses are in motion, they're out of there.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're only triggering that they may smell you a little bit or they may hear you, but they don't see you, more than likely they'll stop, they'll listen, and as soon as you walk on by, they go right back to what they were doing and they stay calm.
Right, because the woods are pretty noisy anyway, so if a stick snaps, that's pretty normal for them.
It is. It is. But when they can put their eyeballs on you, plus the smell of you, plus tripping the sound aspect, they're gone.
Right.
But because you're not, you have that advantage, right? So with the Border Patrol advantage there is that in the afternoon, now you're going to use it differently. Instead of walking between the timber and the wall, you're going to walk a little slightly different path, and you're going to push through into your food plot. And you'll walk on the inside wall because all the deer have been eating in the food plot and they're laying off on the edges chewing their cud.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're laying essentially in their living room looking out at the Border Patrol wall, and you're able to sneak in, get in the back, get up in your stand, and then when they get up, they can't just walk through wherever they want on that wall of Border Patrol. Now, they could if they really wanted to or they were threatened by predators, they can pull through it, but they're very lazy and they hit the wall. And oh, the licking branches that I spoke about,
mm-hmm.
those bucks, they hit those, and those are like fire hydrants for deer. They literally work those all the time. So, and that's not just bucks, but bucks and does, and they work them 365 days a year. And by having licking branches in that hallway, the deer feel safer using them during daylight hours. So what you'll find in the morning is the bucks take longer. And the more licking branches you have pulled down at the right height, the more times you stop the deer. And every time you stop, it's like time in your bank,
yeah.
in your bank.
That's a good point.
It takes them longer and longer and longer and longer. So if you got up 15 minutes late, if you have enough of
Steve.
Those fire hydrants, you potentially can still capture a deer, you know, after your buzz wears off, you know, right, or whatever.
See, that doesn't mean that you can get out there at, like, noon every
yeah.
time and expect the deer to be still out there making scrapes.
45 licking branches out.
See, Steve's yeah. Steve did put in the work. He put 88 licking branches out next to his Border Patrol. He's like, yeah, that'll take him 4 hours. Okay, I can sleep in until here, get out to the
I got
stand.
An extra hour. Hell, the sumbitch is only at number 32 now. Yeah, you know, I really enjoy this product, but I'm actually offended by the name.
Yeah, I was going to ask you as a joke
you
earlier.
Know,
Nick, when we talked about it before the show, you're like, I want to discuss Border Patrol. I'm like, what are you, one of those guys that think Trump's a bad dude for separating kids from their parents?
ICE needs to be abolished. What? No, it doesn't.
Yeah, this product's been around a lot longer than Trump's been in the position to talk about Border Patrol, that's for sure. But
Cameron had something
yeah.
on
yeah, yeah, to get back on topic.
Thank you,
sorry,
Cameron.
Dude, there's a bunch of bags of seeds in front. I couldn't
yeah.
see it. There is a smoke screen of the Border Patrol's in front.
Yeah, so the smoke screen. So, you know, going back to my roots.
Hold
and,
on.
Sorry,
Cameron had a
question. Yeah, yeah. yeah. on the back. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Cameron's like, back on topic.
Sorry, Cameron.
Hey,
damn
it.
Transition, though. So have you
going back to my roots?
Have you noticed if deer bed closer to the food plots having the Border Patrol up?
Oh yeah, definitely. And they'll actually bed in the food plots depending on how you set up the interior. So that picture that's on the website that you guys, I think you guys had the picture up during the podcast right now. But that
yeah, it's our cover art is what we use, I believe. Right, what I sent you.
Yeah, that one, yep. So
yep.
that's just over an acre and a quarter field. And there's a perimeter screening with entry-exit points strategically positioned. And then in the inside, we have teed walls. They're teed off of one end, and then the other, you go over a little further, and it's teed off the other end going back. Well, what that does is it forces deer in at a certain point. There's a wide open space. They don't feel overly constricted. They work in the food plot. So this buck, for instance, he's going to check for does, and he's going to go to a food source, and he walks in that opening, and as soon as he walks in, there's a wall, say, 20 yards away. So he can only see that area that he's in. He has to walk in. Well, he feels safe because of that soft edge. It's like a security blanket. So he walks in, he walks over to the wall, and he walks up the wall, just like they do down, just like they will down a fence row or a stump row between fields, right? They walk because it gives them that sense of security and they can jump and run multiple directions. They'll walk up that wall, but what is it doing? That teed off wall is taking them to the other end. If you happen to be hunting over a food source, which I will do it later in the year, and I have nothing against it. It does work. But what this wall does is it takes a deer that has just absolutely frustrated you for years. When you go to the north, he's on the south edge. When you go to the west, he's on the east edge, right? And you're like, gosh, when am I ever going to win this freaking chess game, right? Well, what this does is that it forces him into the food plot to look for does. He's checking the food source because the does are always in the food. And he's going to walk on the interior wall, and he's going to walk down to the end of that tee. And that is pinching, creating a pinch of 20 yards. So if you have a tree stand hanging just outside the food plot at 20 feet in the air, he's got a broad, high percentage broadside shot. When he turns the corner, he's going to peek around the corner. His focus is going to be in the next corridor, not on you moving, drawing your bow, doing any of that, right?
Yeah.
And because he turns, what is he doing? He's giving you a high percentage kill shot, broadside shot, because he's going to position his body to give him the optimal escape and to still be able to look around the corner. Yeah. And then once he feels safe, he's casual. So we have killed some giants, absolute giant bucks. Our customers have killed some big bucks using that Border Patrol method. And the Border Patrol also has food in it because, let's face it, most guys and gals out there are working with an acre or maybe even smaller food plot, right? So they don't have these big 4 or 5 acre, 20-acre fields they're trying to plant and do all this craziness with. And they go, well, I have brush and I have trees, so I really don't need Border Patrol. I will tell you, Border Patrol can be more powerful than the food in it because it will force the bucks to commit to the field and to get into the plot, and it allows you to create pinch points even on small plots. So
I love everything about that product and that blend, because I'm just thinking, if a guy has a little bit of timber, but he has a big wide open flat spot or a pasture that he has access to plant, you can make your own almost maze and pinch points and funnels and you can design your own destiny pretty much with this stuff, which is such a fun thing to think about, because you can take something flat where deer aren't going to move through in a certain way. You might not know what they do once they get out there. And you can really make them do what you want. Like you were just saying, like when that buck's going to come in at the corner and he's looking around the corner, focus on that, and then boom, you make the shot. Like,
you can never control a deer, but that's about as close as you can get, is to make him go where you want him to go. That's
amazing.
An awesome thought.
You know, here's a thought. Maybe you guys have had this experience where you own the piece of property that has more of an open field between two sections of woods, right? You have, say, you have woods on the east and woods on the west with some open area in the middle, and your neighbor just on the other side of the property line has a finger that sticks out. It could just stick out 8 foot. It might stick out 80 foot into the field, but it creates a shorter distance for the deer to cross over from one woods to the finger to get to the other woods. You're never, and he kills the biggest buck every year, hangs it up, drives it around, you know, drags it all over town.
Yeah, fuck that guy.
Showing,
you know,
off that he killed the big fuck, right? Right? Yeah, and, you know, that may be you. I don't know. But the guy with the,
out of the group,
when
maybe.
You don't have that, when you don't have that situation, you're like, damn, I'm never going to get ahead, and I'm never going to kill that buck because he's got a blind on that side of the field at that point sticking out. He's got a blind on the other side of the field, depending on the wind, and he's going to capitalize on opening day every year. Well, I've had, my solution is to take the Border Patrol right up to the corner of the fence on the west woods and create a hallway with the Border Patrol. You plant a wall on either side, you create a hallway down the middle so that the deer can come into that hallway, and I'm going to have no opening, and I'm going to zigzag it around through the opening to my woods, and I'm going to take it right into the middle, into the guts of my woods, so that they spend as much possible time in the woods giving me and or my family or my buddies the best possible hunt, right? So I'm steering the deer from that corner, and I also will put multiple tunnel or multiple hallways across that open area, and I bring them all to one central hub. And when I bring them to that hub, where am I? I'm in the hub. I have actually built a 4 to 5 foot tall stand that's like a deck, small deck, and put a pop-up blind on it, and the Border Patrol grows up around that, and you disappear. So now you have, let's say you have 100 yards across, and you put in four different tunnels. Those deer are going to take the 100 yards. You just shrunk it down now you're winning the chess game again. Mm-hmm. They're going to go into one of those four tunnels because they want to cross the field. They're not going to do it in a wide open area. They're going to go down that tunnel, that safety hallway. Mm-hmm. And that safety hallway is going to go to that hub, and you then access to the hub and the blind from the outside of where any of those walls are.
Mm-hmm.
Boom.
See,
and
I love everything about that. I know we're making a huge selling point for Border Patrol. Is that something that a lot of people buy, or do you think it's something that a lot of people look over?
Oh, it's my number one selling seed next to Deep Woods.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say, on your website, it's like the number one seed product up on here. So I was wondering, if that's something that just people don't think about in depth, like we just explained, or you know what I mean? I didn't know, because I didn't really know about...
I don't think they do think like that. It's like an aha moment when somebody explains it. Like I explained it, like, wow, that really makes sense. I never thought about it.
Right, right. Because I didn't know about any sort of products like this. Because is it a blend of Cameron just spilled the beer in the studio.
First
time. Party foul. Well, handle your business.
There's sparks flying on the board.
Yeah, that's the first beer ever spilt in the studio. This episode of this segment of the podcast is brought to you by Mana Coolers. Thank you, Mana Coolers, for providing cold beer so Cameron could spill a beer on the studio table.
Leave it to the intern.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're fired, bro.
I'm new. I don't know what to do.
You're not even an apprentice yet.
Okay, I forgot what I was saying. I didn't even... Is it like a blend of sorghum grasses?
So what it is it's our KFP structure and our KFP foundation. Now, the KFP foundation is a real high-end sorghum that puts down a solid root structure. It's very sound, and I call it the 6x6s, right? The pole barn wall of the wall.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a lot of things that are a lot of different grasses and Egyptian wheats and other things that are out there that when they turn brown later in the season, they literally tip over at the slightest breeze, right? They're mm-hmm. not structurally strong enough to sustain any kind of wind or weather. And so I, of course, tried all kinds of stuff early on when I started to work on creating the screening idea. And that's funny because it was, motivated by one of my customers. and I'm sitting here meeting with them, and I said, hey, what do you guys need, right? What do you need more of? And, of course, the smart-ass comment was, well, if you could get the deer to move during daylight hours, that'd be nice, right? Well, my mindset is, I'm like, oh, okay, that's
okay,
a challenge.
Okay, smart-asses.
Right? I got this. So, I played with everything. I did corns, I did Egyptian wheat, I did different sorghum, Sudan grasses, I tried switch grasses. It's all different types of things. I'm thinking, what is it that I need to do? I need to create a screen. How do I need to do it? I need to do it so it's as simple as possible, because most people don't have the equipment. Most people don't have money or time, et cetera. And trying to do long-term switchgrass is a son of a gun. It doesn't grow everywhere. It's not as it's a difficult thing. And switchgrass, a lot of times you don't know if you've been successful or failed for 2 years. And you've got, usually hundreds, if not thousands of dollars invested into creating this screen. Border Patrol, I can wrap a one-acre food plot for $43. And it creates this awesome screen, but it also has 40% food in it. And that was my point earlier, when you have small food plots, that most people can't afford to give up footprint of a food plot with food because it'll never support their deer by putting in screening. And so, mm-hmm. again, early on, I said, hey, I have to figure out how to get this in there. So as I was developing a better screen in the KFP foundation, the 6x6 of that wall, I started to play with some other things to help me thicken the wall up, because I started, it had to be 14 foot wide to create a wall. And if you took 14 foot all the way around the food plot, there wouldn't be much left of a food plot to put actual food in there, right?
Right.
It's pretty constricting. So, and the goal or objective was to not be able to see through the wall late in the season when it turns yellow and brown, but it stays standing tall. So I accomplished the tall piece. The narrowing of the wall took me a while, and that was working with our growers, and we ended up with a high-grade Sudan grass that has a very wide leaf. However, the sorghum and the Sudan were competing in the soil, and they were killing each other. They were doing the UFC throwdown, and choking each other, right?
Kick his ass.
So Right, exactly. And so they were not getting the height I was looking for that I had got originally with just the one species. The problem with the first one, I couldn't create a thick enough wall without going super wide. The problem with the combination was they were fighting with each other. So then we did some crossing, and we got some different species, and we crossed them, and we produced essentially the foundation and the structure, and they developed roots at a different depth and a different intensity within the mix. And so we were able to get our percentages down. I did all the homework and all the hard work and the failure so that my customer can have success wherever they want to plant this thing, right? We plant this in right. Canada. We plant it all the way to Texas. We plant it all over the Midwest. It's very, very, it's very friendly product for successes. It does like sun, though. It likes a lot of sun.
Okay.
But the footprint of trying to add food into the screen, that was really challenging. It took me about 3 years and to get the right combination. And so we have in there now our KFP spring pea. It's a climbing vining pea, and that makes up, that's 20% of the mix. And that gives you mid-20s proteins for your young or for your fawns who are still in that lactation cycle early, the fawns who eventually get weaned from mom, the peas. Those peas, the leaves and the vine, everything about that plant is edible. And it's one of the very first foods they can eat, and high protein at that. And so when you look at a killer food plot blend or a product that of a seed species that's in one of our mixes, I have done the research, I have done the time, and I also raised deer in high fence for 11 years, so that was my test specimen. But we really focused in on what about that particular species of or seed type and species allows the deer to utilize it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
And so when you, there's a lot of buzzwords about palatability and all this digestibility, and you look at all these products that are out there. The reality is that you really have to do your work, and you have to understand that it's a balance between, I have this great looking, gorgeous looking food plot, and the deer eat it, and all they do is crap it out, and they don't benefit from it.
Mm-hmm.
It goes in one end, out the other. And being able to grow a good, sustainable, high-dense, thick food plot that the deer come in and eat every day. They don't come in and gorge themselves to the point they eat it to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fine line between the two things. And the peas and the forage soybeans, which are non-pod producers that are in Border Patrol, provide 40% with a mid-20s protein through the whole spring and summer growth of Border Patrol. And Border Patrol takes about 90, or roughly 90 days. It can go faster in high humidity and high hot temperatures, which we all seem to have a lot of most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that can get, that will help also the wall in high deer density areas, because you're supplying a different food and a more desirable food than eating that young screening.
Mm-hmm.
So the screening is allowed to get tall and not be consumed. So that's sustainable. Now you asked me about smoke screen, and smoke screen is a brand new product for us. We just launched at ATA in January. We've done some research and development on that particular product. And the reason we developed that is that a lot of people this time of the year, where are they? They're at the lake, they're at the cabin, they're vacationing,
hopefully
with family,
listening to this podcast.
Listen to the podcast, kick back, drinking a beer on the beach in Florida, or, you know, wherever. Well, probably not Florida, it's probably 110 degrees there, but Michigan, you know, it's finally 90 degrees here. But kicking a pole off the back, trying to catch some salmon or something in the big lake. But the bottom line is that they are not thinking about food plots, right? They're that hunter that starts thinking about food plots when they close up the cabin, they put the boat away, they pack the camper in the barn, and they're like, oh, finally, I did all that, my brownie points, my cookie jar is full of brownie points, now I can go do my hunting, right?
Right.
And at that point, they've been perusing and they're thinking about it. They're like, oh man, check out that Border Patrol, that stuff's cool. I can't tell you the number of calls they get. Oh man, I want that. Tell me more about it. Well, I can tell you the first thing is it's pretty dynamic, but we'll have to see it next year to plant it, because you can't plant it in the upper Midwest here, like Michigan, Wisconsin. You want to get it down by the end of July.
Okay, so we still, listeners still got a little time to get some ordered and get it out.
Oh, absolutely. Yep, we've got a whole month to work with in the upper Midwest. As we go south, you can buy a couple more weeks, so probably mid-August. But the smoke screen was developed so that I can offer a solution to get at least a 7 to potentially 10 foot tall wall for those who are contacting me only thinking about fall food plots, not thinking about putting spring summer plots in, or at least putting a border patrol wall up to plant inside of later.
Mm-hmm.
And the smoke screen develops in about half the time border patrol does. About 50 days versus 90 to 95 days.
Oh, very cool.
And the cool thing about the product, because I'm not one dimensional in the way I think, remember I'm a solution oriented person, it can't just do one thing, right? I'm like, hey, what else can we make appealing? Because there's not going to be any food in this thing.
Right.
Well, the sun hemp is actually a food when it's young. And after it gets a little bit of height, it becomes less palatable to deer, leave it alone. And it makes a really nice screen. The KSP structure is also in that mix because the structure is a faster growing. It can be planted later, but that foundation cannot. And so we have one of the species of our KSP structure that was during our learning curve that we blended with the sun hemp. And what that does is that creates the taller portion of the wall where the sun hemp only gets about 7, maybe 8 foot tall. But the combination of the two creates a wall that we're looking for, and we don't have to go wider than we do with border patrol. But sun hemp is a soil pounding soil builder. It pounds free nitrogen into the soil. So if you have a brand new spot and your soil's not the best, you know, mm-hmm. it will actually it'll pour free nitrogen into the soil for you.
Oh,
and
right.
while it's doing that, it's pulling potash and it's pulling phosphorus from below back up into the soil or up into the seed bed. So it's conditioning the seed bed for your next food plot. So
very cool.
It's dynamic in the way that it works. It feeds the KFP structure because that structure likes nitrogen, but it produces far more than what's needed for that part of the mix and for the building for the next food plot or to cut the guts out of it and create the maize, right? You can plant a whole field in smokescreen and then go in there and for fall, you can plant it in the spring or summer. So it can be an alternating product between it and border patrol, right? So border patrol is going to use a lot of nitrogen. It's going to require more nutrients to be grown, and it's going to take a longer period of time. But it's dynamic in its own right, where the deer don't pass through it unless they're threatened by the predators. Smokescreen is more of like when you go through a car wash and you've got the spaghetti strings hanging down, right?
Yeah.
You know, you got to envision that, or like a thick thicket where you take your hands and open your fingers as wide as you can and kind of crisscross them over each other. That's kind of that brushy thicket that the deer like to go hang out in and feel secure. That's what smokescreen is more like. So it's not restricting, constricting. It's not directing as much. The deer kind of flow in wherever they want. In and out, but it does create that structure to the point where it does force the buck to walk through a point, look for the deer, and if there's another wall on the inside, it's still forcing him to move, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it met the objective that those on vacation, those at the lake, those on the boat, those doing other things have a product that they can still put in and benefit for fall in the smoke screen for their food plots to create screening. So they can slip out after they watch their football game in the afternoon and slip out 15 minutes late to their stand and zip right on by those deer that are in their beds, or maybe they transitioned into the food plot, you know?
You know, so. leave it to an engineer to figure out the most efficient way to, you know, make any product. Like, that's nuts. You know, yeah, you have that smoke screen that's going to work for you, but also, yeah, like, you can, it's conditioning the soil. It's working for you. Yeah, you
right.
are an engineer, man.
Yeah, I know.
that's a gift.
I'm a deer geek, but I love it. You know, I really, for me, I know at the beginning of this podcast, what we talk about, food plots seem difficult. They seem hard. They seem, you know, expensive, or they seem like, you know, and intangible to people. And they're really not. But you know what? Everybody works their butt off for their money to pay their bills. The cost of living is expensive. Your beer, right? You got to buy your beer.
Tough.
And, you gotta have, you know, you gotta have money for your hunting gear. You gotta have money for the boat and the camper and taking the family vacation. And when it's all said and done, there has to be some value in the products and in the investment of the time you're putting into a food plot, there's got to be good value in it. And so I'm also a very good keeper of the checkbook, not only mine, but my customer. And because they, it's extra money that they're spending on a product, or they're spending on me to come out and do a consult, or me to put a food plot into them. And whether you work and you make $200 a week working a factory job, or you make $200,000 a year in a white collar job, it doesn't matter to me. What matters to me is that we maximize your dollar and we maximize your time, and that the product does what it's supposed to do. And you know, I'm an installer. That's how I started, right? I didn't start with a seed company. I didn't start with a feed product. I didn't start with this great line of products we have. It was an evolution over time, and I was installing for other people. So I was asking them to trade their money for my time and my expertise to put in food plots. If I failed, not a good thing.
Right.
And so I've always taken the approach with the product that I sell, that I use it myself, and I go in and install food plots for people that are paying me to do so in 26 states. I can't drive, you know, 5-6 states away to put in a food plot and get a call that, hey, Nick, it looks like the Sahara Desert. Where the heck is this damn food plot at, right? Mm-hmm. That paid you to do. I can't have that. And so I really value that. By taking the time up front and being the engineer, right, being a deer geek, and making sure that it's going to do what it's and perform the way it's going to perform, my customer's going to have success. Because, you know, I don't want to be that number 25 on the list of seeds that suck, right?
Right. Just that we don't want to be number 25 out of 25 hunting podcasts.
Yeah. You still made the list. Gotta remain positive at all points.
Well, let's transition
to
a little bit.
Be the top of anybody's list for that,
right? Yeah. So. Well, let's transition because I think those are two really good blends. I think, you know, especially Border Patrol, is there's so many benefits to it that it's amazing. But let's kind of, I hate to say, let's generalize, but let's say the seed blend that you would put inside of Border Patrol. What one are you going to pick and why? That way we get a little more covered besides just those two products. I want to kind of go on to like a regular food plot seed blend for you.
Yeah. So we have, our staple product that grows in sand, gravel, clay, loam, perfect, you know, Kentucky or Iowa soil is our Climatize. And our Climatize is a staple in all of my management plans for the reason that it has the same peas and beans that are in Border Patrol. Again, highly digestible, highly palatable, usable, help the deer rebound, maximize their ability to absorb what they're eating, breaking it down, and utilizing it, less waste. It also contains buckwheat, which is another protein food source, easy, digestible, and it's a soil builder, so it's doing something for the soil. And previously, we had our KFP Extra Sweet sugar beets in this mix, in the Climatize, and I have since this year migrated it over to our radishes, because I feel like it's a better fit for how many of our customers seem to have migrated into using it and in the different soil. So it will grow in beach sand, right? Mm-hmm. Historically, I used to say, well, what'll grow in beach sand here in Michigan? I said, well, you know, beach grass and rye, maybe, you know? Well, we were able to come up with the particular species of the plants that we have, or the seed types that we have. And those are really good producers in that situation. They produce about 3 to 4 foot of available forage throughout the entire plot. So the deer literally weigh the stuff to eat it. So they feel safe and they're protected. Again, the predators aren't going to be able to get them. We have some fawns that hide up in the food plot, and they stay really close. And it conditions them to come to the food plot during spring and summer, which is why spring and summer food plots give a lot of hunters the advantage that guys or gals that only plant in the fall don't realize, because they're already creating habits. These low pressure time of the year when you're not at your property, you're leaving it alone, you might be zipping in and out to check your cameras or whatever, but you're really not messing around in your property a lot. Mm-hmm. And that creates a lot of feeling of security. And as your Border Patrol is growing, your food's growing, the deer are, instead of walking down the fence line and hopping to go to the north, they're coming to the south into your property, and it's part of their everyday routine. So that would be a staple. Our brand new product, that because I feel like we needed a secondary product that people could plant in the early spring and summer and produce a lot of tonnage, but not have to go back and plant in the fall. And that's our new White Rage. And our White Rage is our KFC extra sweet sugar beets and the KFC radishes.
Mm-hmm.
And that is blended at 50-50, plants between 3/4 of an acre and an acre, and it produces major tonnage. It was actually inspired by my customers, again, who from the deep south don't really like to plant turnips because they feel like the deer don't eat them until January or February.
Right.
And two of the species in our Carnage Brassicas are our KFP turnips and a particular species of purple top turnip. And they felt like that portion of the food plot wasn't really benefiting them during the hunting season. They needed something else. And they said, man, we love your climatized mix, but when we get cold, it kills the buckwheat and the peas and beans are all gone, and all we're left with was the sugar beet and now the radishes. And so we put this together 3 years ago and started planting it. And so from Indiana, southern Indiana, Ohio, Illinois, on south, we've been able to give a product that it works all the way to the north as well, but it works very well down there to plant that in the early spring and summer. They browse on the radishes. They browse a little bit on the sugar beet tops, but that is a sustainable product that takes you from late spring, early summer, all the way through winter, as a product. And, so that's a pretty cool, adder that has come into, you know, our offering, I should say, not an adder, an offering that we can give to our customers now and add some diversity. Because climatized is really hard to beat. I still migrate to climatized because it's 3 to 4 foot tall. The tonnage it produces in a short period of time, and it grows in very, very extreme conditions.
Mm-hmm.
But the White Rage, I think, is going to start to hold its own, and people are going to start to realize they can produce 10 to 15 tons an acre. That's a lot of food.
What do they say a deer needs an acre? Isn't there like a standard?
Well, they are consuming, they're consuming, it depends on your deer, it depends on the amount of browse, but about, 2,000 pounds of food is what a whitetail is going to eat. And I'm trying to think what the timing was as far as the buck, because they weren't only eating browse, they were eating feed pellet too, but, on an average diet, I think it's about 2,000, can be up to about a ton a week in forage. No, not a week, a ton in a month.
Damn. And that's, forage. That could be like deep timber forage and everything like that as well.
Yeah, if it's browse, it's, any kind of food that they can, they're browsing on. It's a variety. And deer need a variety. So it's not like, hey, I can just feed them high percentage protein pellets and they're going to survive. When I did high fence, the most important thing was the natural browse and the green forage that we supplemented. That was really, really important.
Yeah, very cool. It's amazing how well, I shouldn't be amazed. I should expect you to know all this stuff about your products. But to me, it's crazy. You just know so much in depth, but it just shows that you've put the work in to get the product exactly what you want it. Like, the testing for Border Patrol and whatnot when you went through. And
you're even letting it go for 3 years, and you're like, I know there's something here, but you just keep chugging on.
Yeah, well, like I said, man, I put a lot of heart and soul into what I do, and I'm inspired by the success of my customer. And, hey, they say, I need this. We need this solution, Our Groganics, we talked about soil early on, and, synthetic fertilizers and all I've ever had to work with, really. I really haven't had anything to truly build sandy soil or rocky soil. Or how the heck am I growing in red clay in Georgia? Not very well. Remember, I felt like I was going back to being 18 or 19 years old and failing miserable.
Uh-huh.
My buddies and failing with their money is different than failing with the customer's money, right? That many states away. So the need was there, and we developed a product called Groganics. It's a natural-based, waterway-safe fertilizer that builds and replenishes the soil. It started with our bulk version called Hydration, and the Hydration is like giving the ground a big drink of everything it needs, the micronutrients, macronutrients, the bacteria, the organic matter, minerals, nutrients, things that are missing. When you have sandy soil or rocky soil, the bottom's constantly dropping out. So any nutrients you add, they leach out. beyond the reach of your food plot roots, your newly developing plants. And clay is suffocating. So you try to grow and you get 3 to 4 inches and you're like, yeah, I'm really going. And then it turns purple and it turns yellow and it dies. You're like, oh, how, you know, well, this food plotting thing is impossible or it's too hard. I don't understand, right? Well, it's just because people don't understand how important the soil is and soil health. And so we really changed our focus for several years. And we'd already developed our seed blends in the particular species, and we had crossed some of the seeds that to get the properties we wanted out of them. We shifted over to how do I fix soil and how do I develop products that will deliver what we need from Canada to Texas. The challenges are very much the same. Now, the soil might be slightly different. It might be dirty sand in Michigan. It may be it might be yellow sand in Florida, the high hot temperatures of Texas, hill country, the rocky ground in several states, upstate New York and all that area on the East Coast. But at the end of the day, it comes down to the quality of the soil, its ability to hold nutrients, and its ability to hold moisture and to give it to the plant when it needs it. And so I broke it down to real simple points, and we developed the Groganics to fix part of that. It builds the soil, replenishes the soil, and starts to create some body to the soil that can hold and support moisture and nutrients. We have a fungi, for instance, that creeps and crawls through the ground. It's a healthy fungi. When you think about your front porch, and Charlotte's up there building her giant web on the porch, right?
Yeah.
And
some
you walk
pig.
Up to that. And you're sitting there looking at that thing going, man, I hate spiders. But you're looking at that thing going, man, that's pretty cool that they can build that in such a short period of time. But you stick your finger in it because you can't help it. You've been doing it since you were a kid to agitate that spider. And the thing goes, and it goes away, and it's gone. And it has no integrity, no structural integrity at all. But if you were to leave it alone and leave her to her work, and it rains, and you come back the next day and you look at it, if you think about a spider web full of water droplets, and you know how heavy and dense water is, you're going, how in the heck can that thing possibly hold that much moisture, right? It's a spider web. I touch it, it's gone. Mm-hmm. And it's holding a significant weight in itself. Well, the fungi that we have in our Groganics creeps and crawls and creates that spider web effect over in layers, over and over and over in the soil. It's collecting the moisture that's being leached out, and it's depositing on that. The other cool thing that it does is it pre-tunnels the ground. It's creeping and crawling. So plants, when they have to put roots down, have to put mm-hmm. energy into driving the roots down into the ground to get into the moisture and the nutrients. This fungi that you're working into the soil starts doing that work for the plant.
Really?
We are producing deeper, healthier root structures in our plantings as a result of the combination of things that are going on in Groganics. We are able to produce 30, 40, 50% more tonnage depending on the extremes of the soil that we're amending than putting down, say, triple 19 synthetic fertilizer. Head and shoulders, 3 to 4 inches after a month of growth with triple 19 in a piece of soil in Mount Vernon, Illinois, in some crappy old CRP field. This is my customer testimony picture. I think the picture might even be on our website. To the side of the other side of the field where he took one 40-pound bag of Groganics because he doesn't know how to do math, he said. And he had that left. And he did all the rest of his farms. He said, well, I'm going to put this in a 5-gallon tar bucket, little feeder, like, you know, that the batteries in it, you can hang it in the tree. It looks like a tar bucket. He wired that up to 12 volt on his side by side. Why he didn't buy something different, but hey, you know, he's innovative. And they chung corn with it late season. Don't tell anybody. Down the edge of the woods so that they have some, you know, golden kernel to draw the deer out of the wood. Well, they threw this 40-pound bag of Groganics and they zipped it through this food plot. And you can see the maze of them zigzagging around. And they literally put that bag in about 2 foot wide over 1 acre in the zigzag. They thought they were really zinging it out there. It wasn't going anywhere. But it's funny because it shows this bright fluorescent green area where they planted the Kearns brassicas with 300 pounds to the acre, textbook planting, and they had you know, 3 to 5 inches of growth after about 3.5 weeks. The side with 140-pound bag of Groganics was 11 to 12 inches tall, wherever the Groganics deposited, a 2-foot trail around, zigzagging around this food plot. Very dynamic picture, very cool. And that right there can show the dynamics of when you fix and you feed the soil and you give it what it needs and you release the nutrients that are there by adding the pellet lime and or ag lime, the potential, the pure potential of putting the same effort or even less in this case, zinging it out like they did out of a spreader, but the potential that you have to be successful with just a few of the right tools in your toolbox to make it work, right? And you're planting the right seed. That's another thing people, like I said earlier, they want to go right to this one thing. I want clover. Well, clover is picky. It doesn't just grow anywhere, at least not quality clover that's digestible and that's usable for your deer. You can grow a lot of different types of clovers and maybe not best conditions, but the deer are not going to favor it over other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you look at our resurrection clover, those particular species are what they are because they are favored. And when you plant them, the deer will use them, they will benefit from them, they will digest them. And when you're thinking about the food plotting piece, it's a soil test. Fix the soil, put the lime down, use Groganics. I'm telling you, it's crazy good. And but the other thing I could never get over was this Mother Nature and her taking me to the mat on her drought, and she just kicking my butt with this drought, mm-hmm. where she just cuts off the spigot, shuts off. There we go, no more water. Sorry, boys. And think about it. If you're a fall food plotter last year, and I don't know if you guys are or aren't, but fall food plotting was a horrendous last year because there was no moisture.
Right.
There was no rain, and people planted all excited. Hey, I'm waiting, right? They're out checking their trail cameras. Well, they might have pictures of deer, but they sure aren't in it. There's no food plot. And it's frustrating. And so we've been developing a product over the last 5 years with one of my chemical engineer buddies that is 100% organic pellet that absorbs moisture and nutrients when they're available in excess. So snow melt, early spring, and early summer rain showers, it's grabbing the moisture and it's drawing it down to itself. It's called retain. And it is a solution to the problem. I don't care what state you live in, Mother Nature, at some point between late June, like we're in now, where we're in Michigan, we're going to be 95 to 110 heat index this weekend.
Yeah, that's us too. Can't wait.
Yeah, we've been getting the rain, but generally we hit July and the rain just tapers off to nothing. And then we go into August, which is when the deer need to start finishing their bodies out and getting ready and building that, you know, finishing their body and getting ready for the pre-rut. And they're not going to have supplemental food in our food plots if we don't do some work now, mm-hmm. while the rains are available. And this retain is a small, it's about the size of, I would say it's about the size of a rape seed or a brassica turnip seed, about that size. It's very small. And at 12 pounds to the half acre, 24 pounds to the acre, it absorbs up to, each one of those pellets will absorb 300 times its weight in moisture and nutrients.
Damn.
It is awesome. And I meant, did I send you guys some of that or no?
I don't think so. None of that. We have, okay. I've been eyeballing this Border Patrol the whole time, but no, we didn't get any of that, but.
Okay, I'm going to send you some, and I know, you know, you can, I would like to send you some so you can play around and talk about it, because it's a really interesting talking point. Literally in a 1 liter bottle of water, if you take not even a half a teaspoon of this retained pellet and you sprinkle it in there, put the top on and shake it up, in about 10 minutes, the whole bottle turns to gel pellets. Okay? Just sucks that water up.
Really?
You add nutrients. Yes, it is. It's cool. It's very dynamic. And what it does in the soil is it's doing the same thing. High humidity, it pulls it into the soil. It pulls it to itself. And what it does is it stabilizes the moisture between the inside of the pellet and the soil surrounding the pellet. And it makes sure that that moisture, as long as it has it to give, that it keeps pushing it through the wall back outside for the plant. And when it's absorbing nutrients and absorbing moisture and it's swelling, it's breaking up compaction in the soil. Naturally breaking that up. What it's also doing is, as it moves soil, it's allowing oxygen. So you're creating this super dynamic oxygen network at the root level, and oxygen is second only to moisture for plant growth. So if you can envision this, we're gonna make it bigger than life. But let's say if you have buried a whole bunch of softballs full of water in your food plot, right? Mm. And that they had a dissolvable, you know, this lasts for 3 years in the soil too, by the way, and it's 100% natural, so it's 100% organic, so it just dissipates back to how it started, which is cool. So there's no plastic, no polymer, none of this garbage going back in, because I do care about what I'm doing every day in the field.
Mm-hmm.
But think about a bunch of softballs or baseball size being buried full of water in your food plot, and also the Mother Nature shuts off the spigot. Well, guess what? We get to laugh for a change, because we have invested in and put an insurance policy into our food plot.
Yeah, right.
By putting this retain. And so now, as our baseballs and softballs start to give the water back, what happens is they move soil. They displaced it, right? And they created and broke up the compaction. When they shrink, they create even more space in the soil. And what does that do? It gives a huge influx of oxygen movement to the roots of the plant. We're in the drought. We have water. We're gardening, starting to give it back. We just brought in even more oxygen flow to the roots. We're kicking butt. We've got warm air temperature and warm ground temperature. We have the perfect, absolute perfect growing condition. And while everybody else's plots that don't have retain in them are starting to go dormant, shrivel up, become less available to the deer, your food plot is not only available, but it's growing at such an intensely rapid pace that as deer are, the utilization is rising during August and September during this drought period. It's their utilization of the plot is would normally be stressing the plot is the, able to keep up with the success of browsing and seeing the best growth it's seen all year.
And your neighbors all hate you.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Right. Well, that's all right.
Well, yeah, they can hate us.
That's awesome.
The plot is always greener on the neighbor's property, except for now. Yeah. When now that you've got the equalizer.
So. Yeah, right. Well, my neighbors don't hate me because remember I said I'll hunt. So I go ahead and create this perfect oasis of this, you know, amazing area, and then they go off the property and people kill them. So my neighbors love me. They kill bigger deer than I have time. So it's all good.
They'll
I get back to them.
Kissing your feet for a little bit of seed too, I imagine.
Yeah. A few of them do buy seed from me and pick my brain as often as they can. So. Yep, it's good stuff, though.
Well, man, you're so full of knowledge and all this. It blows my mind. It does. Once you just start explaining it, like, it's not that hard. You just got to dive into it a little bit. And it's like once you can learn it all, you know it. And like you said, it all starts at the soil test kit, which kicked my own ass over here. But I will never plan a game without doing a soil test.
I didn't do it for 3 years. I didn't know I was supposed to do it. I didn't even think about it, you know. I really didn't, and so I made the same mistakes, and that's what I tell people. You know what?
I'm a rookie.
You know?
That's fine, though. Like you said, it's all about learning, and, you know, I appreciate you sending us the seed. We'll get some of this out and we're going to have our learning curve on your seed is what it's looking like here. So,
no, that's cool, man. No, that's great. And I think I sent you a few of the staples, you know, the Deep Woods. The Deep Woods is a really cool product.
Yep.
It's the only product to have that rivals Border Patrol. And again, that's because, you know, 70% of the hunters are gun hunters and, you know, and they're fall hunters in that. So they usually do fall food plots only. They don't necessarily do spring plots. And Deep Woods grows from full sun down to 2.5 hours of sun. It grows in poor quality soil or perfect soil. It'll grow in ideal manicured food plots, or it'll be the next best thing to throw it up in the air and wish for the best. It performs well under those conditions too. So it's my answer to the number one seed in the entire world that's full of ryegrass and less than acceptable forage for whitetails. throwing it up in the air is the first word in the thing. So, in the name of the product. And so we really wanted to produce a higher quality product, more digestible, more usable for the deer, but that would actually create success and usability for the consumer, right? Because they're still going to spend $33.50 to buy a half acre bag of deep woods, right? Not a ton of money, but at the end of the day, it's still almost $35 for the seed. And so it better freaking work. You know,
right.
And for me, I really take a lot of pride in making sure that the products that we have in the bag are clean. They're free of weeds, free of noxious junk. If I have coating on any of the seeds in the bag, I will just apologize right now. I can't do a damn thing about it. So, my growers, they all gave in and drank the freaking blue Kool-Aid, and they all have coating on seeds now. And so what we do at our Fruit Plus, so I'm not a 23-year hypocrite of anti-coating, is that I make up for it in seed count. So in our clovers, we get 50% more clover in the bag than anybody in the industry. And we have about 30% coating now with our new Crimson White clover added into that mix. It equates to about 30% coating, but we have all 90% germ seed. And all of our seed species have a hard seed rating, which means it can be frost seeded. And which is promoted by a lot of people and a lot of companies out there. Frost seeding is a very cool way to do things, especially if you don't have tools and implements. It's a very easy way to have success. But the problem is if you don't have hard seed rating on your seed, your success is little to none. And so then your money just went right out the window. So we want to make sure that when we're delivering a product, whether it's the clovers, it's the deep woods, it's the Border Patrol screening and all the things I explained about that, it has to have multiple uses. It has to have multiple benefits, not only to the deer, but to the person trying to plant it to have and set the stage for the opportunity to harvest, you know, the deer they're trying to chase after. So, it's cool, and clearly I'm passionate about it. I'm about jumping up and down the other side of the phone every time I talk about it. Cause it's so cool because this opportunity to come on your show is I'm sure I have reached people I've never talked to before. They've never heard the craziness come out of my head, and they're like, wow, that really makes sense, right? And when they use the product, I try not to over-speak it because I want people to start jumping up and down and go, holy cow, I've never been able to grow a food plot that looked like this. I've never had deer use a food plot as much as they use this food plot, you know?
That
is like a happy papa moment or something, you know.
That you're that excited, you know, about it. You know, if I'm a consumer and I'm going to buy something, if, you know, if I'm wanting to get into food plots and to hear someone talk the way you have about, you know, you can tell you have a lot of passion for it and you know what you're doing. You know, you want to buy from someone like that that feels that way about their product, because if you're just nonchalant, you know, it's not going to excite people to want to check it out, at least. So no, it's refreshing. Yeah. And that's most of the people in the industry should be that way, and I think a lot of us are, but there's some that aren't. But, you know, it's always nice to hear that, and that's part of the reason why we do this podcast, is to talk to people that are passionate about our industry as a whole. So, man, we really appreciate you coming on. Where can people find you? At social media, online, all that.
Well, I really appreciate it, you guys. I'm glad to be here, and I'd be happy to come on again and talk about anything you ever want to talk about. If you have specific questions from, you know, your listeners or specific topics, you know, we don't have to jump on for an hour, but I'd be more than happy to talk about it and spitball it. And you know, if I don't know about it or I don't know enough about it, I'll do the research, and I'd be more than happy to put it to test and try to find a solution. So,
well, one thing we can do, if you're going to be at ATA this year, we can always rock a short episode at ATA show. We like to do the mini episodes when we go to trade shows, so we can always rock one there.
That'd be great.
I have a feeling that we might be hanging out with the great, great fellas at Rubline Marketing. So,
oh, cool. Yeah, they're good guys, man. Really love those guys, and they're hardworking too. They are definitely passionate about what they do, and they work hard for us, that's for sure. So,
you know, assuming that Mike doesn't take a restraining order out on me after the assault charges get dropped, you know.
Yeah. Okay, Steve.
I'm just saying, dude. Big Mike don't want this smoke. I'm just saying.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Do we lose him?
Oh, he's still there.
No, don't be smoking the smoke screen. Don't be smoking the smoke screen. Yeah. You get a definite headache.
It's foggy in here.
Any of that brown hemp you ever might have tried in your life, it'll give you a headache. So. Yeah.
That Reggie Brown?
Yeah. Yeah.
There's too many seeds in the bag, yeah. Bro.
They look like all seeds. Yeah, right.
That'll make you sterile, man. Don't be smoking those.
Oh, that's amazing.
So, guys, just to refresh, don't smoke anything out of the bags when you buy killer food plots, okay?
No, please don't make me put that on a disclaimer. It's not for human consumption out of the water bottle, okay?
All right. Watch it. By the time ATA comes around, all those bags have that, and it's our logo next to it.
Dude, it's the killer food plot challenge. Like, oh, these sons of bitches, the Tide Pod challenge wasn't good enough.
Like, damn it. We're ruining the industry one podcast at a time.
There they go. Look at him slam that chicory.
If you want to do a contest, you'll grow some KFT radishes, and then the contest is how many golf ball size KFT radishes can you eat before you have fire out of both ends. That's a little healthier experiment and challenge for people, but they are pretty darn hot. They can literally burn your tongue. So I do eat them out of the food plot when I get hungry, but not the small ones in the morning.
We should do that with Steve. That'd be if we could do it on video.
How much prime rib do I get to eat during? Because, son, that's not a challenge. And if I get prime rib, and then we'll just mash that shit in the sauce. What's up?
What's up?
That's awesome.
Oh, my gosh. Man, I forgot. We have social media questions. I'll hit some. Some is a lot of what we've kind of talked about. Trevor Berwick, if we have time, we can go through these. If not, we can hit him another time. But
you're fine, man. Go ahead. Whatever you want to do. I'm good.
Trevor Berwick asks, what's the ideal size and shape of bow hunting food plot and favorite crop for late season?
My favorite is the Kearns brassicas. They produce 5 to 7 tons an acre, all lettuce variety brassicas. We have converted more customer that followed other seed companies over to killer food plots with that because it produces, not only really healthy quality food plot, but it produces success in the field and harvesting great deer. The size and shape of a food plot, winding curving is better than great big wide open rectangular food plots. So if you have a rectangular food plot, we use the Border Patrol to try to create some structure like we talked about earlier, smoke screen, mm-hmm. and try to create that feeling of security and more of a maze winding feel versus that big wide open kind of, exposing themselves. Mm-hmm. As an overall size of a food plot, I think a most effective size of a food plot is about two acres or less, but it needs to be big enough for the deer to bother to come into. Mm-hmm. You can certainly set up a little 1/8 acre kill plot that can be along a travel corridor that can stop the deer, so it doesn't have to be huge. It can be a series of small food plots because the benefit is it allows you to slip into your stand and slip out without bumping herds of deer on big wide open fields. So hopefully that helps. I think he said his name was Trevor. Hopefully that helps him answer that question.
All right. I'm trying to pull up the other questions. My computer just decided I don't want to mess around with whatever I'm doing now.
Welcome to small town Illinois internet.
Yeah, it's bad.
You pay the same price for everybody else's internet, but you get less quality.
Just trying to get a good service over here,
Bro.
Yeah.
That's
how I feel about cell phones, man. You can talk to astronauts on the freaking moon, but I'm in downtown metropolitan Detroit or Grand Rapids, and I can't even talk on my cell phone. It's crazy. Dropping calls like mad.
It's so bad.
See, that's how we didn't actually land on the moon because that reception was too clear.
No damn way
in 1969, dude. I've had drop calls on landlines. Come on now.
Okay, Southern Southern Outdoor Chronicles writes, what to plant for the Mississippi heat? My car says 99 at 5 o'clock on the way home. It's killing my plots.
So we have done a lot of experimenting with our KFT chicory and the climatize and some of those species. And the climatize seems to do extremely well in heat. The chicory, especially if you frost seed or get it in early in the spring or put it in the fall, is even better because it gets a good establishment of roots. But the chicory, our KFT chicory, is very, very thin. It produces 40+% protein, and it puts down a 14 to 16 inch taproot the size of your pinky. So it's very drought tolerant. So it's our guys from Fired Up Outdoors and a couple of other teams and some of our customers in the southern Oklahoma area. That is the only thing that's been staying green in the middle of the 100+ degree temperatures for 20+ days, is that, you know, the climatize and the chicory. Of course, the Border Patrol is going crazy. Their Border Patrol down there is like 15 foot tall. It just blows my mind. But those are, I would say, would be staples for the heat. As opposed to white clovers, which only put down, without organics, they put down about 3 to 4 inches of roots, right? Mm-hmm. So with organics, you're going to get, you know, 8, even 10 inch deep roots going. So that can also help. The deeper that you can get the roots and the earlier you can get the plant established before the excessive heat comes, that will help. And you want to make sure that if you have a perennial, that you don't mow it ahead of the heat. Keep it thick. Even if there's weeds in it, go and just mow the tops of the weeds so they don't produce a seed head and 10 bajillion more competitors in the soil.
Right.
But leave your actual food plot alone. Just knock the heads off of the weeds, whether you do it by hand or you do it with a brush hog up in the air above your plot. That can help those situations as well.
Okay, and there's a couple questions in here. One person asks, what food plant now around the week of July 4th that would still grow and be good through the winter? And then somebody asked about weed control. Just to keep the weeds out of your plot in general.
Okay, so the first question was, what do I plant that can last further into the winter months? Is that correct?
Yep.
Okay. So Kearns Brassica's Deep Woods and the New White Rage do a good job of that. And I understand that I will have to apologize. Smokescreen and White Rage are not on the website right now. Okay. There's a hole in my wall from beating my head into it. But the boys at Rubline Marketing are going to save the day. So you hold on. Grant's going to get us rolling here.
Chad, Big Mike, get our shit together over there, boys.
Big Mike, it's not them. They are saving the day. They rode into town on a white horse and said, look, we're going to take you on down the cross finish line. So hopefully in the next week or so, those will be there. But if anybody's interested in those products, there's a lot on social media, and you can reach out to us that way, or you can call me directly, my cell phone, my back pocket. I'd be happy to help you. Or you can reach out to us through email. But those are only two products. Everything else available on the website. The Carnage Brassicas produce 5 to 7 tons an acre. They are sustainable. They sustain under the weight of the snow and the ice, and they continue to provide a lot of food and a lot of easily digested food. Deep Woods, our Deep Woods blend I mentioned earlier, can grow from full sun down to shade. It can produce a lot of tonnage in brassicas. And then it also has cereal grains and our new crimson white clover, which is a crimson and a white that we crossed, and it produces 20 to 25% more tonnage, so they're able to get some good, highly digestible protein. The cereal grains in rye and wheat are important because they stimulate the digestive system inside of a whitetail, and you guys have probably heard, like, your deer get plugged up or their system starts to shut down in the winter, or if you overfeed, like, corn and without some other supplements, they can get kind of deer and get bound up, right? And they're not doing very well healthy. The cereal grains and the browse from them help to stimulate their digestive system and keep it working efficiently, helping them feel better, helping them maintain their energy, and ultimately keeping the stress down on the deer during the late season in the winter and get them on through to the spring. So those three, between the sugar beets, the radishes, the rape, the turnips, the kale, and some of those cereal grains, those are the staples for fall winter sustainability in the killer food plot lineup.
Very cool. Okay, let's get one more in. Hogan Smith, what's the latest you could get a clover plot in the ground and be successful?
The latest you can get a clover plot in, actually, we're going into the month of July. It's very difficult this time of the year to plant clovers, because of the competition between Mother Nature. Every 10 to 15 days or so, she's producing a different weed, or there's grass competition going on in the food plot. So what I would suggest right now is to start killing the plots off as she's producing different types of grasses and weeds continue to turn the soil, allow the grasses and things to grow, kill them off, get as clean of a food plot as you can, disc the plot at the same depth over and over, and then when we hit about mid-August, you should have a clean palette, a clean canvas to work with, and that's when you can seed in your resurrection clover and your KFC chicory. You can blend those two together, get them out into the plot. At that point of the year in late August, mid to late August, you have essentially will be on the outside looking back or looking forward. Mother Nature is not going to be producing all those weeds that she does this time of the year. It's going to give you the best opportunity to establish your perennials. And then what they're going to do is they're going to grow up fairly quickly because you're going to have humid temperatures. So they're going to develop and produce green out of the ground. They're going to give that high protein to finish the body of those deer going into the most stressful time of the year, which is pre-rut followed by rut. And then over the winter months, they're going to allow those perennials to expand and establish an even stronger, more intense root structure that going into spring, those two in the KFP Resurrection Clover and Chicory will be the first thing to green up in the spring, and they will not allow the grass and weed because they have developed that strong root structure over the winter months to invade the food plot, and you'll have a much healthier, longer-term opportunity at a 5 to 7 year perennial food plot with success and not having to deal with as many weeds and grass situations. So,
very cool. Well, thanks everyone for submitting those questions. Man, awesome answers. So
You're
much
welcome.
Information in this episode. Can't thank you enough. Thanks for sending us out some seed to play with and cut our teeth on food plots.
I'm sending you some retain too, man. I can't wait for you guys to do that. You got to do the model test and maybe share it on social media. Maybe do a live video or something that way and share it with your listeners. That'd be cool.
Soil tests will be happening, especially next spring when we start from a completely fresh slate. new year, new me, you know, soil tests.
Yeah, there we go. It's never too late to start. So
that's right. I'll learn. I just got my lease where I can start planting my own stuff, so I kind of have my freedom now, so I'll learn as I go, I guess, here. But I'll be re-listening to this episode, I can tell you that for sure.
Awesome.
So,
awesome.
Hey, we appreciate it, man.
Yeah, thank you.
Tank, Steve, you guys got anything to add?
Think I'm good?
My head hurts. That was a lot of information. I just sat through class.
You're going to have to re-listen to this and take some notes, okay?
I know. I have to.
88 licking branches. You can sleep till noon.
Yeah, there
you get out and hunt.
Most important
fire
thing.
Fire hydrants, man. You need those fire hydrants, so.
That's hilarious.
You got to have them.
Only thing Steve can remember is, like, you're going to go home back. I can't remember if he said I can or can't smoke the smoke screen.
So I'm just going to try it.
Yeah, I'm just going to try it.
See what happens.
Nice.
So, hey, man, we appreciate it.
Hey, no, thanks, guys. Definitely appreciate the time, and hopefully we help some people learn some stuff tonight, and they'll have greater success for it. So
I'd say that
they can check us out on killerfoodplots.com and or on social media if they have any further questions.
All right, awesome. Yeah, I think people are going to learn a lot from this one, but stick around on the phone. Everyone, thank you for listening to the podcast. We appreciate the hell out of you. Go to iTunes, wherever you listen. Give us a 5-star rating if you've been enjoying the shows lately. We got some big things coming. I think next episode we got an announcement that we can finally release officially. So look around for that. But it's summertime. Have a good 4th of July. Go shoot your bow. We love you.